Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for October 18th, 2022. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And I would ask Director Colley if he would please lead us in the pledge tonight.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Colley. Announcements for tonight's meeting are as follows. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or the internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. Remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom and you will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public present, and I appreciate the public comment cards that have been submitted. Anyone else from the public? There are public comment cards out in the hallway. Procedures for tonight's meetings are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. All directors are present for tonight's meeting except Director Peterson. We will now continue the meeting in accordance with the guidelines that we just mentioned. Move on to item 3, public comment. I do have one public comment card for item 3. Ms. Noltemeyer, would you please make your public comment?
Pam Noltemeyer, just a quick reminder that shortly we'll be voting for an entirely different type of agency. And I wanted to inform you that if you haven't had a chance to look at it, that it only allows 9 people to be on the board. That's 9. I hope you've been able to learn that, but I'm sorry I didn't mention it sooner. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Madam Secretary, are there any members of the public online who wish to make public comment?
There is not.
Thank you very much. We can move on to item 4, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, or modifications to the agenda from the board? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved, and we can move on to item 5, approval of the consent calendar. You will see on your agenda there are 6 items on the consent calendar. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
So moved. So moved, Director Ford.
Motion by Director Ford.
Olszewski seconds.
Second by Director Cooper. Is there any public comment on the consent calendar? I do believe there might be. Let's see. Ms. Noltemeyer has a public comment on item 4 before we go further. Ms. Noltemeyer, would you come and make your public comment on item 5.4?
I did look at five, and
That's on the for you to approve without, but I would like for you to at least pull it off. And five will provide treatment for PFAS on the same.
Ms. Noltema, would you mind speaking more into the microphone?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm trying to read my quickly notes I made at home. It's on the baseball field, from my understanding. This NWEL. It's right in the main pumping station there. And that concerns me because that water has been pumped out into our water supply for quite some time. And I'm a little concerned that this is just on the consent calendar for the treatment of the PFAS. Where is the action being taken to find out what and where the PFAS is coming from? Because as a ratepayer, I certainly would like to know that. Is my time up? Anyway, if you could tell me that this evening, I'd appreciate that. But that is a well, that's also where small children are around all the time. The baseball fields, you know where I'm talking about. It's right where the baseball fields, and they're in full going now, just hundreds of them coming in there all the time. And I'm sure they're drinking the water, which makes me concerned also. If they're not, that's good. But I don't know how they're functioning without having any water on the playing fields. But right now, if NWEL is right there in the treatment plant for my, what I have in my things that I quickly looked up just before leaving to come down here. So I would like you to confirm if NWEL is right there in the treatment plant at the Pony Fields. And if it is, it's a great concern of how long this has been going on. And I would like to know exactly if I'm correct on that and exactly how long. And I know it's NWEL is right there in the treatment plant, and they have to run it every time they even do one of the other two wells that are on the site. So that's a grave concern for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltermeyer. Mr. Stone, would you like to respond?
Sure. In reference to item 5.4, just for background before I cover what that item actually covers, Ms. Noltermeyer is referring to our NWELS treatment plant that's been operating now for almost 2 years, I think. It's a permitted operation through the Division of Drinking Water. This proposal does not impact that at all. It simply uses that location to access raw untreated water to be able to test out some other filtering media or treatment media from a number of different manufacturers. That's called a pilot scale evaluation. And it's run through a small like tabletop version of a treatment plant. That water does not go to customers, but sampling is done to assess the performance of that media over time, which will help us in the future if we want to select different media. We'll know, have a better idea of how it might perform and whether there's economic benefit for our customers or an enhanced level of treatment that could be realized. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Are there any other public comments from members online?
There is not.
Thank you very much. We can continue discussion. We do have a motion and a second for approval of the consent calendar. Is there any discussion from members of the board? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Since I wasn't here last board meeting because it was Yom Kippur, I'm going to abstain.
Vice President Otohosky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
And Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution numbers SCV-304, SCV-305, SCV-306, SCV-307, and SCV-308.
Thank you very much, Board. We now can move on to item six, action item for approval. Item 6.1, the presenter tonight is Rick Vassilopoulos. Adopt a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Shadowbox Studios development. Just by way of information from the board, for the board and for the public, there was an updated staff report that was handed out tonight, posted to the website, and emailed yesterday. Mr. Vassilopoulos, or Mr. Stone, if you'd like to make opening remarks.
Just to introduce Mr. Vassilopoulos. Thanks. Great.
Thank you, President Martin and Mr. Stone, and good evening, board members. I am Rick Vassilopoulos, Water Resources Planner, and I'm here tonight to discuss the water supply assessment that was prepared for the Shadowbox Studios development. Next slide, April. So first, just a quick presentation outline. I'll first discuss the SB 610 requirements, then move to the project's description and its water demands. I'll talk a little bit about both our available and future water supplies, and then some supply and demand comparisons, and finally, staff's conclusions and recommendations. Next slide. So unlike urban water management plans, water supply assessments are project-specific analyses that are required when a city or county lead agency determines the project is subject to CEQA. Water supply assessments must determine whether a project supplies will be available during normal, single dry, and multiple dry years to meet the demand of the project, as well as existing and planned future uses over a 20-year planning horizon. Projected supplies can include our future planned supplies, and water suppliers' board of directors are required to adopt a water supply assessment. If the water supplier concludes that the water supplies are or will be insufficient, the water supplier shall provide to the city or county its plans for acquiring additional water supplies. And an adopted water supply assessment is not subject to direct legal challenge and can only be challenged as part of a CEQA action against the lead agency. Next slide, April. So as for the project location, the Shadowbox Studios development is located between Via Princesa and 12th Street, just east of Railroad Avenue in the town of Newhall. Next slide, April. Shadowbox Studios development is a planned full-service film and television studio campus to be developed on approximately 94 acres within SCV Water's service area. The project will consist of 473,000 square feet of sound stages, about 561,000 square feet of workshops, warehouses, and support uses, 221,000 square feet of production and administrative offices, 37,000 square feet of catering and specialty services, and about 17 acres of irrigated landscape. Next slide, April. So the projected water demands for the project were calculated using the same methods that we used for to calculate future demand for in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. The project's demands in an average year are projected to be 196 acre feet per year, with the demand increasing to 207 acre feet in a single dry year and 200 acre feet per year in multiple dry years. These totals reflect additional demand of 25.6% above the model water efficiency landscape ordinance standards and a 3.77% climate change factor. And these demands were included in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. Next slide. So staff's approach in preparing this water supply assessment included updating our supply projections using the most recent information that we have. The project's assessment relies upon both the current and future water supplies of SCP Water, and we've modified the supply portfolio from the 2020 Urban Plan to reflect current conditions by utilizing DWR's newest 2021 final capability report and modifying the schedule for recovery of our wells, which are impacted by contaminants. Next slide. For our Table A reliability, staff used the 2021 DWR delivery capability report Table A supply reliability assumptions for average years and multiple dry years. But in single years, we figured a more conservative, we'd use a more conservative approach than the DWR report. And we used 3% reliability instead of the 6% used in the report. These percentages assumed that the carryover supplies would not be incorporated into available dry year Table A supplies, as was assumed in the DWR report. Next slide. We have planned for future supplies as well, as shown in this table. Supplies include our recovered Saugus 201 and 205 wells, 6 new Saugus wells, and our recovered alluvial wells, as well as our phase 2 recycled water projects and Five Points Westside Community recycled water. We also include additional extraction from our Rosedale Rio Bravo banking program and Newhall Land and Farms semi-tropic banking amounts, as well as their nickel water. Next slide. So due to these changes and updates, our water balance analysis for normal years, single dry years, and multiple dry years has changed slightly over the next 30 years. Next slide. But as the summary table shows, our projected water supply is sufficient to meet demands for normal, single dry, and multiple dry years through 2050. Water demand for the Shadowbox Studios project was included in these calculations. Next slide. So in conclusion, staff has evaluated the long-term water demands and has compared these against existing and planned water supplies. Demand projections were based on population projections, county and city land use plans, both active and passive conservation, and climate change impacts. The water supply assessment concluded that the total projected water supplies over the 30-year projected period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Shadowbox Studios development, as well as existing and future uses. Next slide. That being said, staff's recommendation is that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Shadowbox Studios development and direct staff to submit the water supply assessment to the City of Santa Clarita. Next slide, April. And can take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Rick, for the presentation. We do have one public comment card. Ms. Noltemeyer, will you please come to the podium and make your public comment?
I was a little concerned, and I really did want to hear what they were going to say about the water supply. And that's very upsetting. They make these projections, but who will be the ones suffering from it will be everyone else, because it's not too realistic. But we will have, by that time, a board that will be subject to the public's response to these type of things. And if you voted for it, that would be a good reason. And I've been in this type of thing for a long time to come up for getting rid of whoever might be on the board. I'm just saying there's going to be 9 elected ones, and they will be elected. And that's in a very short time. You will find it is entirely different. I've been an elected official myself and for many years, many, many years ago. And after that, I was in an agency that looked at these type of things. And I'm just telling you, it's a whole different ball game, should we say, once you are in your own elected position. Right now, none of you are really elected. You're just here and representing it. I'm not saying you did a bad job. I'm just saying it will change drastically when you're in a position where a lot of people, and it won't be just those that, like us, that are disconcerned. It will be people that are coming after you to get a big water supply like they're asking for now. And it would be your responsibility. And if the public sees it, I'd be happy to file remove all of you because of it. Because I've seen these things all the way through. You can tell I'm old because I've been through these type of things. And I'm just telling you, know that as soon as you are in that new agency, a lot will change for you. And you have never dealt with it before. Some of you may have, where you were elected and subject to recall. But once that goes into effect, you are subject to recall. So bear that in mind.
Thank you, Ms. Noltimer. Mr. Colley, our Director Colley, would you like to make a comment on that?
Yeah, I always like to make sure that the public is informed of facts rather than fiction. There are 9 of us sitting here today that have been elected, and every single one of us would be subject to a recall if the voters decided to do that. So it is certainly not true that we haven't been elected. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley. Madam Secretary, are there any members of the public online who wish to comment on item 6.1?
There is not.
Very good. We can now open it up to board discussion, questions, or motions, however the board should. Director Bronstein, go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for this presentation. It was really well done. And as I'm a big fan of having maps, so I know where things are exactly, it was, thank you. I know exactly where they are. first of all, this looks like a great development, having studios and businesses in our city is definitely a good thing because, we're growing and we should employ local people, hopefully. However, I have a few questions about it. I know that we're not supposed, I guess it goes back to something that I keep on wondering about because I know that we don't really get a say in land use. But I've been asking for a while, how can we get in the room when this land use is being come up with? Because it doesn't make sense to me that the people that need to supply the water are not part of the conversation when it comes down. I think we need to somehow be in that room because the demands are changing. They're growing. They're getting, we're in a drought and we like it or not, things are changing differently than we've anticipated. So I really hope that we get in that room and get some kind of say over something or take us into consideration. My questions, though, are, is 3.77% enough on the climate adjustment? And I don't know why nickel water is still in this water assessment. It should never be in there. And do we also calculate reduction in well capacity for droughts? I mean, I know we want to pump more if we have a drought, but we will also have less, like the water moves, changes. So I just want to make sure that we have all those calculations done. Thank you.
Mr. Stone, would your staff, you or your staff, like to respond to Director Bronstein?
Yeah, Rick, are you able to kind of step through those different questions?
Yeah, I think so. The as for the climate adjustment, we're using what DWR uses, which is, I guess, what staff probably thinks is being maybe excessive. So we think that there's easily, enough climate change in our calculations. As for the, being in the room with other entities when they're making decisions on land use, you're right, we don't have a whole lot of say, and this is a requirement. The water supply assessment is a requirement for their CEQA, but we don't, we can only go so far with telling them, we have to give them the facts, and this is what this project or what this process does. We show that we, in this case, we have the water to meet their requirements. But we do have a chance during their CEQA process to analyze more than just the water supply. We can look at other things when we get a look at their final EIR or their draft EIR. So we do have a little bit of say there, but not a whole lot. You are correct. And as for the figuring in the, I think your question was about the demands or the well capacities or the thing. I can double check and maybe Dirk would know. I believe we do take that into account moving forward, that we, our wells are not figured at using their entire capacity, but Dirk might have a little bit higher level take on that one.
Yes, there are adjustments made for pumping during drought or dry periods. The amount of water that comes out of the alluvial aquifer is reduced during dry periods. In the future, our use of the Saugus aquifer would increase as a means to access the substantial amount of groundwater that's stored in the Saugus aquifer during dry period or during for use during droughts.
Thank you. And one last question. I'm sorry, I had it open and then I closed it. On page 10, it says that the total supplies in 2025 are going to be 86,000 and change, while the demand with passive conservation is going to be 87,000. That seems to me that we don't have enough water. And then once again, at the end in 2050, it says that our total supplies are going to be, I'll round it up to 118,000, and our demand with passive conservation is going to be 122. So am I misreading the table on page 10?
No, with just passive conservation, which we are actually in active conservation almost all the time with our conservation department. So yes, we can. Passive conservation is more that we just hope people that will do the right thing, but we're actively in active conservation, and I think we think that we'll always be in active conservation mode unless something
happens. I think there's a definitional aspect to that. I believe passive conservation in the context of the urban water management planning would be those reductions that are attributable to codes and standards. So for example, when there's a new standard for a 1.6 gallon flush toilet, anybody who changes that out over time, and then that's modeled, that there's no incentive or anything needed for that. It's going to happen over time as people remodel or new homes are built. And active would be programs where we're out actually encouraging people to put in controllers, to change their landscaping, to put in higher efficiency sprinklers, and then our education and general encouragement of efficiency that's more proactive. So over time, there have been methods developed to estimate based on past experience what those two things can do for you.
So
we would, so that might be the belt and the suspenders are the state objectives to reach higher levels of efficiency over time. And we will be having to have active conservation programs in order to meet those state objectives as well. So that's another prod that will keep us moving in that direction over time.
Yeah. I guess I'm just confused because when it's laid out like this, it looks like there's a chance of not having enough water.
It's a great example of I wouldn't call it a relic, but context that has been sort of superseded. Back in the earlier days of programmatic conservation and urban water management planning, there was something called the Best Management Practices MOU that agencies across the state signed on to. And they committed to follow a suite of practices. And those were updated by a group called California Urban Water Conservation Council, which had water agencies, environmental groups, and conservation technology people on that council to go through and look at what were the best management practices available across a whole suite of different things, devices, public education, leak loss, all those things. And within those, it was realized that some of these were, quote, passive. They were going to happen if the code changed for toilets, rather than everybody having to go out and convince everyone to put in a 1.6 gallon toilet. That would then happen over a longer period of time. So some agencies still would go out and do that because it got you the conservation sooner. But over time, you find fewer and fewer of those toilets out there. And there's a lot of work done to survey the inventory of those devices out in the community. So even now, our CII program for apartments goes and looks at apartments that still have higher use toilets, and we go ahead and change those out. We don't wait for them to remodel the entire apartment complex because it would take longer. But that passive conservation was kind of a product of how that MOU was set up. There was a category of passive and a category of active. And when the legislation for the SB 610 and 221 was written, my guess is that that convention of how we account for conservation is sort of two buckets, or two no longer needing to be full buckets, that was carried over. So it's a math calculation to show you what portion of the conservation is passive, going to happen whether the agency does anything or not because of external codes and things like that, and then what portion is active that will be dependent on the agency continuing to pursue its conservation program. So hopefully, and Dirk, feel free to explain where I was wrong on that, but I think I'm pretty close.
No, I think you got that note, Matt.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that it's, as I said, it's just, I guess it's there because it needed to be there and all that, but it just, looking at it, it makes someone go like, okay, are we sure? Because there isn't much wiggle room. I mean,
yeah,
honestly, going with active conservation, having 5,000 acre feet as buffer, that can make someone feel nervous. So thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Any other discussion? Director Armitage.
Thank you. So those of you that are on the Water Resources and Watershed Committee, I've heard my comments, but I'm going to make them again so it can be heard by the full board. And first of all, thank you, Mr. Vassilopoulos, for your presentation. So first, I want to say that I do very much appreciate the language that has been added to the cover letter that is part of this packet, because I appreciate that it brings attention to, and sets expectations for adherence to the Model Water Efficiency Landscape Ordinance standards. And secondly, it asks to work with the city to find other ways towards meeting efficiency standards. And third, it recommends adherence to low impact development standards. So I think that's a really good thing. And I appreciate kind of the evolution of the cover letter to include that. I also appreciate that the 26% overage factor doesn't seem to be as obvious. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it wasn't changed, but it didn't seem as obvious to me this time around when I looked at the document, which I think is a good thing, because I did feel it was kind of counterproductive to say, we want you to save water, but here's an extra 26% because we think we're going to use it. So thank you for making it less obvious. I mean, I do think it's important for us to factor that in kind of internally, right, to have that buffer, but not necessarily be so explicit about it. And then going back to the cover letter, there, that last paragraph in it refers to the low impact development standards, and a specific chapter is mentioned that relates to minimizing hydro modification impacts to natural drainage systems. And I feel like that's kind of focused on minimizing flooding, which is a good thing. However, when I looked at the language quickly, I didn't spend a whole lot of time with it, so maybe somebody can sit with me if I'm misunderstanding it. But I did look at the language of the low impact development standards, and there is language in there also pertaining to groundwater infiltration and replenishment, which I think is just as relevant to kind of our goals and missions as a drinking water agency, if not more so. So I would also, and I made this comment in committee, I would like to see some of that also briefly mentioned in the cover letter going forward, because I think it's a good consideration for all projects, but also particularly this one, considering the fact that this is being developed right around a creek. And I know we had some comments from the Sierra Club with their concerns about that. And then lastly, as I mentioned, the additional language that I appreciate that is in the cover letter, it is in the cover letter and it's not in the document. So, you know, the cover letter hopefully will be read and then maybe tossed into a recycle bin. But again, it's not in the document and I would like to see that language in the document. And I know we've all shared our feelings about that, but I'm still holding true to my opinion about that as well. Because we are being asked to vote on the resolution related to the water supply assessment document. So, and not the cover letter. Thank you.
Rick, would you like to respond to Director Armitage?
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words, but and I'd be happy to sit with you and go over that that section of the code that you require, you know, that you're referencing, to see if I can, you know, maybe alleviate your concerns a little bit more. Like Director Bronson had mentioned, you know, it's hard for us to get a seat at that table to change anything like that, but there may be ways for us to notify them even more so than the cover letter. We just, you know, we do just don't believe that that language belongs in the water supply assessment itself.
Director Planbeck, go ahead.
Well, I would like to ditto Director Armitage's comments and ditto the part about thank you for your presentation as well. And I hope when I make comments that it's never, the staff never feels it's directed at them. It's out of concern for making sure our water supplies are sustainable. I think the other part of the low impact requirements should be in the cover letter. I mean, I don't even know if we are calculating the loss of recharge from these massive developments like Vista Canyon that are being built over the floodplain. And it was interesting to view that webinar on Monday where they're saying the best thing we can do to help our water supply is protect our floodplains. And I know that our agency cannot do that, but we can at least bring up how important they are and how much it impacts water supply. And I'm not sure that we really have calculated the loss of recharge. You know, I don't see that in the GSP. I don't see that here. But I also want to say a couple of things that I've sort of been bugging me in the past. Halfway got fixed, and I was so excited to see it. I've been complaining a lot about using permitted well capacity instead of actual pumping capacity. And I see on page 115 of our packet and 3-27 of the assessment that, in fact, you did put normal year and dry year, but you still left capacity. And then in a little tiny footnote at the end, you say permitted and max annual capacity for wells does not represent anticipated annual water supply. So why is it in there then? I mean, why put something in there that makes it look to the decision makers that we have a lot of well capacity when we can't get that production out of there? I mean, I really appreciate that the GSB water budget analysis is in there, but why is this other stuff in there? And this, as you all know, is supposed to be a document to inform our decision makers. And I think we've all said that obviously they're not being informed that we need to be more careful about water, because otherwise you wouldn't have to make a statement about please do your low impact stuff like you're supposed to. Please require it because you're 26% over water use. So they're not getting it. And I think one of the reasons that they're not getting it is that, you know, we keep saying there's plenty of water. And there's another thing that really concerns me, and that is the hardening of conservation. As we do all these toilet replacements and get everybody to replace their lawns, we're not going to be able to do a massive additional amount of conservation because there just won't be anything else to cut back on. And I don't think that is, you know, I don't know how you reach these calculations. I tried to find out what you use to reach them. But, you know, I think in the end where you've got in 2050 that we're going to save another, 15,000 acre feet with active conservation, you know, how did you get that? I mean, this is the sort of thing that really worries me, because they're talking about we're facing mega droughts. And I just think that it's not really clear to people how close we are. And the other thing is, and I've said this a lot, the fact that you always have in there that we can get 35,000 acre feet of water out of the Saugus Aquifer when we have never pumped that much. And so we're going to start pumping that much because you're going to put in new wells, but you don't actually know that you can get that. And from 1986 Slade alluvial hydrologic study to present, everyone has said that the Saugus and the alluvium are connected. The Saugus is getting recharged through the alluvium in some areas, and the alluvium, part of the reason there's water and water connection to the surface is because of the Saugus. And I think this sort of pulling this figure out of the air when we haven't done any testing and then saying there's plenty of water for the future, I just think there should be some indication that this, it's assumed we may be able to get this. It's not, but the way it is stated in here, it's like we're going to have this water and it's going to be here. And I'm also very uncomfortable. I know the Water Resources Committee had a presentation on the health of the groundwater banks and what's happening with that, but we didn't, the rest of the board didn't. And I feel a bit uncomfortable with all of this statements in here when I haven't heard anything about that update. So I'm hoping we can add that update in the future. But I also agree that cover letter needs to be like, just a cover letter and put it on the inside of the report. And then that way, it would get, it would be in perpetuity with the water supply assessment. Right now, there's no guarantee that that will happen. So those are all my comments.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Rick, Director Planbeck covered a lot of ground in that comment. If there's anything in there that you would like to respond to, please do.
I don't know that I have a response other than the, you know, we've spent a lot of time, you know, figuring this and using the urban water management plan was a big part of our calculations and how we figured the water for this project. So if we're, if, and we were comfortable with the numbers that we were coming up with the urban plan. So we think that these numbers for this project and future projects, you know, align with, pretty much align with that, especially with our changes due to new information that we've had. So they're probably actually better than the 2020 urban plan are right now. So this is our, I don't want to say best guess, but it's our, you know, it's our most reliable that we can come up with at this point.
So what about hardening of conservation? I'm just curious if there's a response to that.
I no longer work in the conservation department. Maybe Dirk would have, but Matt Dickens may have something if he's here yet, might be able to answer that.
Yeah, I think Matt's probably could put the best the context on that, but the they do a conservation plan. I see Matt's on here. Maybe Matt can talk about the water use efficiency plan and how we developed that.
Thank you, Dirk. And can everybody hear me okay? Yes? Yeah. Okay. So it's a great question, Director Planbeck. Demand hardening is something that conservation professionals and the water resources folks look at pretty significantly. We go, when we develop our conservation strategic plan, we do, one, account for that passive conservation, as Matt Stone mentioned earlier, so that we don't double count. That's really one of the reasons why we have passive conservation, so that we don't say conservation is happening by code, but we're also going to accomplish it through active. So we take passive out because we know we're going to get that conservation through by the virtue of the changes in standards and codes, as Matt Stone also mentioned. When we look at our active conservation programs, we do a ground-up approach so that we can identify where in the various different sectors and different types of end uses of demands remaining will be available for conservation. And so from those estimates, we were able to put together the strategic water use efficiency strategic plan based off of, at the time, SBX 7-7 20% reduction by 2020 requirements. And so that plan kind of forecasted out with continued operations. However, we will update that water use efficiency strategic plan to rather than meeting the SBX 7-7 requirements, to meet the AB 1686 SB 606 urban water use objectives, which become effective in 2024. And those standards will change where we will try to accomplish our active conservation. And so the reality is that there has been some, from the past 30, 40 years, there's been quite a bit of gains in conservation. So in some ways, hardening has occurred. However, there still remains quite a bit of conservation opportunity in which we will identify and update that plan. So just to be clear with that, what that means is that hardening is occurring, meaning that there is efficiency gains in the end use sector and amongst consumers. But we analyze all of those end uses to identify more opportunities to, in order to accomplish that active conservation goal. I hope that answers the question. And so, to help identify that, we do saturation studies as well, which is something Matt alluded to determine what kind of fixtures, practices, opportunities exist in the marketplace and in the universe of end uses, so that we can have a very strategic water use efficiency strategic plan that is based and grounded in realistic savings opportunities.
So when did we last do the water efficiency strategic plan?
We updated that in 2016, and we updated it again and informally during the 2021 the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. Mm-hmm. Now that the state is releasing the standards for the updated conservation long-term framework, as I mentioned in that state legislation, that will create new urban water use objectives and new targets that we will have to recalculate and reformulate our strategies in order to accomplish those savings.
Okay, thank you. I think this is all getting presented to the Water Resources Committee, and then I wish it would get presented to the whole board sometimes. And you know what? I just want to say one thing. There was a whole paragraph in our staff memorandum about we have to approve this. And yes, we need to approve something, but the board has the discretion about making sure that what we're approving is right. So it's not like the board can't vote no. It's like the board has to provide it eventually, but we should be providing a document that will help inform the public. And I mean, help inform the decision makers and the public, but particularly the decision makers, because it's going into an environmental impact report so that people can understand what the issues are with water. And I feel like it's not quite there yet. I mean, I feel like it's a lot better than the first one that came this year. I don't remember which that was for, but you know, I just wish we could take that well capacity out. I wish we could say some things like, this is our best guess that we can get this much water out of the Saugus Aquifer or this much hardening. And I feel like we're telling them that this is, everything is fine when we have to, so we're sort of rolling the dice and hoping they roll in our favor. And I also wish that water supply reports would not come, water supply assessments would not come to the board without a presentation about beforehand about where our banking projects are and how much is in the water bank and whether we're going to be able to get it refilled. So those are all my comments now.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Vice President Ozahowski.
Rick, on the same pages that Director Planbeck mentioned, so page 115 of our board packet, 116 of our board packet, page 3-27, and 3-28 of the report. We have more than two columns available to on that report. There's a permitted capacity, maximum annual capacity, and GSB water budget analysis for normal year and dry year. Can you go over these columns quickly right now and let us know which numbers were being used for the report? And also if you can elaborate on item I in its full context too. I don't think the last sentence and comment number I was read out loud too.
Rick, do you want me to run through that? I can take that one for you if you'd like. We may have lost him.
Rick, you're muted. You have to. There you go.
That would be great. I was just trying to find the table in my.
If you may, President Martin, I can take Director Ozahowski's question.
Go ahead, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, sure. So yes, I think this sheet is trying to transparently communicate the whole picture, is how I would say that. And so, you know, the capacity question is something that I think is important to report. It is a capacity of the well in gallons per minute. So communicating the ability of a facility to produce water, I think, is important to do. I also think the context that is provided on this table is equally as important to do. So what you look through as you move from left to right on the table are the capacity question that was raised, but then you also look at what the actual budget for the sustainable yield of the basin is from an operating standpoint. And so that's where you get to the last two columns in a normal year and in a dry year, what you anticipate to produce, actually produce out of that well field. So I think it's equally important to have both sets of information in that table. It provides the full story of how you produce the water and then how much of water you're planning to produce in the different year types. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. I definitely believe in full transparency by public agencies, and I don't think we should be hiding any figures from the public or from anybody who wants to see these figures. You know, we don't have that. We don't have that right, and we really shouldn't have that right. That'll be all for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Vice President Rozahusky. Are there any other questions or comments? Director Planbeck,
go ahead. Yeah, I just want to say I don't think that it's hiding it by not showing the capacity of the well. There could just be a statement somewhere that says the capacity of the wells exceed the production. But what we have to judge on, what the decision maker has to judge, is the actual what water actually comes out of the pump. And that's where I think this is confusing, because it makes it look like a really lot of water comes out of the pump. Or you could have that footnote, that little tiny footnote that's on the next page, in a big bold letters right on top of those two columns, to make it completely clear that capacity is not production. And it's, you know, I guess I just worry about this, because it looks like we have so much water when you just look at capacity, and we never can get this out. We can never get water out of this much capacity. The water isn't there. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand the use of having figures. Maybe you could tell me why it's important to have. I mean, you said it's important to know how big the well is. Why? If you're making decisions about water supply, why is that important?
If I may, President.
Please, Mr. Cole, yes.
From my perspective, you need to show that you have the ability to produce the amount of water that you're saying you're sustainably going to produce. So it's that reference that gets lost if you take off the first two columns.
But couldn't you say that in all these wells, the capacity exceeds the production, and the producing that much water will be no problem, and then not confuse the planners? I mean, I suggested the last time running some of this, I know maybe this you didn't have time to do this, but I just am so concerned that planners understand what we really actually have, and that there's hardening issues, and that there's problems with production in drought years where you can have all that capacity. And we got down to some really low level in 2015 where they had to do an analysis because we couldn't get enough out of the river. And I think we all know that, but I just don't think we're making it clear. And I think that the restrictive part of water supply is the drought, is a drought year. And, you know, if we have problems with our groundwater storage and we can't bring water down from Northern California, and the Met is having to take more water from the Sacramento because of this mega drought in the Colorado Basin, I just think that the decision makers need to be really clear that things could go awry. And I don't know, I just think capacity is one of the things. And I'm sure there's a way to convey that there's sufficient capacity without putting it in there so that it looks like a number that we can use. I'm sorry, I'll be quiet.
Dr. Gusai, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to add some comments, and it is beneficial to hear the water resources presentations. And hopefully Rick or Dirk can correct me. Dirk led the meeting last time. But my understanding, I mean, we do hear some exciting stuff. Sarah said we have enough in the banks at current conditions for three more years, even if nothing improves, which is terrific. We are also working with AVIC on an amazing project with 100,000? Yes, 100,000, hard to believe, 100,000 acre feet of our own storage in the Antelope Valley. So, I mean, the way I look at it, our agency has been incredibly progressive in securing backup supplies. Part of the reason we all know, and as is explained in here, that we had to pull so hard on the banks is because of the PFAS situation. When those wells come back on, we will not even need to pull on the banks as hard as we did this year. So we kind of had a perfect storm this year and have weathered it incredibly well. So, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with this the way it is. And I know from the Urban Water Management Plan, which is binders worth of documents, this is all explained in great detail for those that want to look at it. I think it's all well backed up, and the Water Resources Committee did recommend bringing this to the board. So that concludes my comments.
Director Bronstein.
I just want to piggyback a little bit on what Director Planbeck said. If we can't be in the room when the decisions are being made, I think that definitely presenting the tables in a different light is very important, because if we can't be in the room and explain to people what we meant by these, you know, what our max annual capacity is, like if you look at it, it's 23,000 versus 7,300. Like there's a big difference there. If I was a developer, I'd look, I'm like, oh, they're under pumping. Clearly they can do a lot more. If we can't be in the room when the decisions are making, I think it's, we need to be clearer on our tables and how we present data. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. You know, I understand the confusion in this. I mean, there's the well permitted capacity, and then there's the actual capacity. The permitted capacity, we can upsize wells to reach that capacity. It's that the wells, as they are currently structured, won't produce that much. But if we wanted to upsize those, we can bring that capacity up on those. So the number is important in there. It's the permitted capacity of what we can do. It's kind of like our allocation with the state water project is 96,000 acre feet a year. We know we can't get 96,000 acre feet a year, but that is our allocation. Some years we get 70% of that. Some years we get 5% of it. So it's very similar, I think, in that. And there are some exciting things that are going on in the Water Resources Committee. I think that our staff has been very visionary in looking for ways to help drought-proof our valley. The way we are right now is people like Dirk and Mary Lou and that were here and help bring these programs on have helped us to drought-proof it. That's why we're in good shape, and places like Las Virgenes are in such poor shape. So I think the numbers are good. I think the study is good. And I think planners understand these. And if they don't, if they have questions, they know right where to go and who to talk to. So with that, I would move to adopt staff's recommendation.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Ford.
Thank you, President Martin. Just quickly, many of the issues that were discussed here were also discussed at Water Resources and Watersheds Committee. When we prepare a water supply assessment, the state has set out a series of steps in a process that we need to follow in order to respond to the lead agency to answer the question for this given project, is the water supply adequate to meet the demand that's expected for the project? It is not to address all water issues. This will be referenced in the water utility section of the EIR. There's a whole other section called hydrology where things like impermeable surfaces and runoff from the site and so on are addressed. And this is the question that the lead agency needs answered at this preliminary stage. We are in fact taking part in the planning process by responding to them with a water supply assessment and doing a good job, which I think staff has done here for this particular project. So with that, I would hate to muddy the water further to say things like, well, we need to, you know, make sure you address the low impact development ordinance of the county or the green ordinance of the city. They have an obligation to do that anyway. They'd be called out right away if they failed to meet that obligation in an EIR or documented in an EIR. So with that, we are answering a simple question. The supply is adequate to meet the demand for the project, and we've done that here, and we should move it forward. And I will second Director Cooper's motion.
Thank you, Director Ford. Director Colley.
So I really appreciate your comments, Jeff. I think it really helps to focus the conversation in my mind. What I hear you say in essence is that the current question is of the water supply assessment for a specific project. And I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that. Staff has done their job and provided the best data that we have currently. And so I'm going to support it. But I don't think that particularly Lynn Planbeck's concerns are unimportant. I think they're very important. And I agree that almost everything she has said is something that we should be concerned with. I think that we need to do a better job as a board of getting more information and providing direction to staff that we want these concerns to be thought about further. And I think that we should provide the leadership in that area, but I don't think it's appropriate that we just simply vote down a specific water supply assessment in order to get there. I've suggested in the past that we provide ourselves time to deal with a lot of these questions, and the Agenda Planning Committee apparently has decided against that. I still think that it would be a good idea. And I think that we ought to be very much concerned with most everything that Director Planbeck discussed today.
Thank you, Director Colley. I see no further comments. We do have a motion and a second. I think Director Ford, Director Gutzeit, and Director Cooper made some very important comments, and I agree with the things they've said. I appreciate the staff's thoroughness in this project, this effort, by the way. I do agree to some extent with Director Colley that we should not ignore comments and questions, but these perhaps can be taken up further in further discussions on future WSAs when they come forward. But tonight I would like to move this item forward. We have a motion and a second. And I would like, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
President Martin, there is a public comment if you wanted to take it.
Did we not take public comments?
We did. It's up to you if you wanted to take an additional public comment. That time did pass for this public comment, but up to you. Okay. Ms. Cattell, hold on just a moment. Ms. Cattell, you may begin your public comment.
Thank you. I was waiting to be able to unmute. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to comment so late. I did want to add just a few more things. I personally have no problem. By the way, I'm here from the Sierra Club. I really have no problem with the figures for permitted well capacity versus the production. But I think I have worked very hard as a member of the public to become somewhat knowledgeable about the water agency and what you do. And I had a lot of difficulty, and I actually had to talk to two different people on staff to understand this. And I just like to say there is a lot of room for improvement to make this a little clearer. And I also want to mention that this particular development is not only on a floodplain, but it's also encroaching on a floodway, that there'll be some channelization. There'll be a tremendous loss of recharge. And as they're planning on raising the height, there may be flooding upstream. Is there any way that the water agency can ask for some, potentially maybe some infiltration apparatus on this particular property to make up for the loss of recharge? Thank you. And it does encroach on an actual blue line stream. So I hope you'll look at this project very carefully. Thank you for the discussion. I really appreciated listening to it. And again, room for improvement for lay people reading this document. Thank you.
Thank you for your public comment.
Thank you for your comment, Ms. Cattell. I'm sure staff will take note of what you said and look into it further. With that, please call the roll, April.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Planbeck.
I vote no, and I would like to say again, I'm not voting against the project. I'm voting because I know, because I think it fails as an informational document, a clear informational document. There's lots of information in there, but it's hard to understand.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
No.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Director Kelly.
Yes.
Vice President Orzechowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-309.
Thank you, Board. We can move on to item 7. And after I introduce this item, I'm going to have to step away for a few minutes. I'm going to turn it over to Vice President Orzechowski. But item 7 is presented by Matt Dickens and Sarah Fleury. It's update on the water operating plan and water conservation response actions. Please, Mr. Dickens and Ms. Fleury.
Thank you, President Martin and members of the board. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager. It's a pleasure to be here tonight to provide an update to the Water Operating Plan and Water Conservation Response Actions in with my cohort, Sarah Fleury. Next slide, please. Tonight's presentation will cover the drought status, that is California statewide drought status, most recent status, the SCV status for Santa Clarita Valley, as well as Los Angeles County. Water supply updates. Sarah will discuss weather and reservoir forecasts, new operation strategies, 2022 operations, and the 2023 operating plan forecast. I'll come back after that presentation to conclude with water conservation updates, looking at regulatory activity from the states as well as SCV water. And then we'll look at SCV water conservation performance and how our community is performing in light of the water shortage contingency plan and drought emergency. Next slide, please. So turning now to the drought status, this presentation is updated from the September 14th presentation that Sarah and I provided to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee. That presentation included drought definitions, state and local drought statistics, and I'll quickly preview the drought definitions, but then I'll dive into statewide and local drought conditions. Next slide, please. So first and foremost, it was a request from one of the members of the committee to identify or look at the definition of drought, as there are some complexities and nuance that range from kind of the common use of the word drought, but for all intents and purposes, a drought is defined as a period of abnormally dry weather sufficiently prolonged for lack of water to cause serious hydrologic imbalance in the affected area. With that, based off of time and intensity, There are four different types of drought: meteorological, that is specific to precipitation; agricultural, specific to lack of precipitation for a specific crop to meet the needs of a crop; hydrological, when that drought condition extends to impact surface and subsurface water supplies; and then socioeconomic drought, referring to situation that occurs when physical water shortages begins to affect people. With that, turning to the most recent U.S. drought monitor for the state of California, it's important to note that currently 100% of the state is experiencing some level of drought, from D0, abnormally dry, to D4, exceptional drought conditions. Currently, most of those exceptional drought conditions are limited to the Central Valley, as shown in the picture here. However, it's a little bit different than what we saw last year. There has been a little bit of relief, I guess, in the intensity of the drought. 1 year ago today, 45.56 or 66% of the state was experiencing an exceptional drought. That's a category D4, whereas today only about 16.57% of the state is experiencing that. So a little bit of relief in those conditions, but it is important to note again that 100% of the state is experiencing some form of drought as identified by the drought monitor. Next slide, please. Oh, I have to press it a couple times. It's because there's an animation on there. I don't think it's, I put the last slide as an animation. Probably have to hit it 8 times. Okay, great. So turning to local weather statistics, this is important to look at to understand how drought is affecting our customers and our customers' demands. With that, we're able to, you know, look at these statistics to understand the impacts between nominal and real normalization of demands and the weather impacts on demands. So when we look at evapotranspiration calendar year to date for September, we actually saw cooler conditions for the month according to evapotranspiration records from local CIMA station 204, which is situated up at the Rio Vista treatment plant. It was down 8.4%. However, year to date, evapotranspiration is up 8.6%. And for just a quick definition of evapotranspiration, that is the amount of water that plants evaporate and transpire during a given period of time. So we measure that so that we can kind of determine how the impact of agriculture and irrigation is going to pan out based off of weather. And there's a lot of variables that go into that: solation, temperature, precipitation, wind, those types of things. Well, not precipitation, but wind and other factors. For precipitation, the current month for September, while we did receive rain sporadically throughout the valley, CIMA Station 204 did not record any for September. For calendar year to date, we look at calendar year as well as water year. For calendar year to date, precipitation is down about 72.4% through September. And for the water year to date, it's down about 12%. That difference is because we had significant rain at the end of the last water year in November as well as in December. Then we look at temperatures. Temperatures, I think, are something that impacts customers' management of their irrigation systems. It also influences evapotranspiration. But for 2022, it was slightly cooler, 93.4 degrees versus 2020 at 95.5 degrees. And just lastly, noting here that the valley is split between, for us here in SCV, it's split between categories D2 and D3, severe and exceptional drought, kind of right at the 14, as you can see in the picture depicted to the right. Next slide, please. With that, I'll pass it over to Sarah Flory to provide some updates on our water supply. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Sarah Flory, Water Resources Planner, and I'm going to be doing the water supply update. So let's move to the next slide. So first thing we're going to look at is the 1 month outlook for October with precipitation and temperature. We did start a new water year October 1st. So you can see on the precipitation map on the left-hand side. California is all white. That means that we have equal chances for above and below precipitation, average precipitation. I checked our Newhall station, and we did get about just under a tenth of an inch so far in October, but we only usually get about a half an inch in October anyway. So at least we've got something, but we probably won't get much. Temperature, you can see that California is covered in those red hues. Red hues mean probability of above average temperatures for October are expected. Next slide, please. So as we move into our next water year, we are faced with a third La Nina year. They call this the triple dip La Nina. That means that we have had three consecutive La Nina winters in a row. If you recall, a La Nina year means that the Pacific jet stream pushes all the storms up to the north, and they tend to miss Southern California quite more often than not. So this is very rare. It's only occurred three times since they started bookkeeping La Nina and El Nino cycles in the 1950s. The two times that it has happened before, the third year was the 13th and 14th driest years for statewide water year precipitation, and it landed around 70% of average, which is similar to what we experienced this previous water year. But overall, we're planning for increased chance of warmer, drier than normal conditions, especially in our area. Next slide, please. And then looking at out November, December, January, the precipitation map shows us those brown hues, which means probability of below average precipitation, and that's reflective of that La Nina winter. And to the right, you can see the red hues again, indicating a probability of above average temperatures. Again, goes along with the La Nina year. Next slide, please. The San Luis Reservoir. I wanted to touch a little bit on storage, and I chose San Luis as an example, but you can see there's three maps here. We're going to start with the larger map on the left-hand side. What this is showing is it's a comparison of our first, second, and third year of drought storage in the San Luis Reservoir versus the average. So you've got the average in the light blue in the background. Our first year of dryness was in 2019-2020, and you can see that red line there kind of goes along with the average and where we end on the right-hand side of that graph. Pretty decent, about a million acre feet of storage. Moves into that second blue line right below it, which is indicative of the 2020-2021 water year, which was one of the driest years on record. And you can see to the far right where the storage level ends at the end of the water year. And that was hitting some record lows last year. Moving from that, we go into the green line, which is this previous water year. And so you can see we recovered, not as high as the year before that, but we are ending the water year in a much better place than we did the 2021 water year. And then you'll see the reservoir level right there. Where when I pulled this map, it was at about 570,000 acre feet. So again, overall story of this is that we're starting out in a much better place than we were at the end of water year 2021. So that's a good thing. Looking at the top right-hand corner, it's another representation of the San Luis Reservoir. And this reservoir is actually split between DWR and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. So it kind of splits out that those storage amounts, and the DWR's portion is in the darker blue and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation is in the lighter blue. You can see there's two yellow lines that kind of shows us DWR's capacity is the first yellow, the first dotted line, and then the U.S. Bureau is on the half. Again, this reservoir split basically 50-50, and you can see we have a long ways to go to fill it up. The third map or graphic on the bottom right-hand side shows us DWR storage and the different types of water that are in that reservoir right now. And so the blue indicates dead pool storage. You've got orange showing us all the backed up water that contractors have been utilizing that space for backing up water in case it's dry again. And then you've got the green, which represents carryover, which is table A from previous years stored there. And then the dotted line at the top is basically the DWR's portion is the difference for allocation use and also for health and safety. So just three different ways of looking at the reservoir. The overall story is that we're in a better place than we were a year ago. Next slide. One thing I wanted to update the board on was some new operation strategies that we've been implementing due to all the challenges we have faced since 2020. One of the things that we've recognized more so the last few years is how important carryover supply has become with regards to being an available water resource to have in our back pocket. Carryover supply is basically unused table A water for previous years, and it gets stored in the San Luis Reservoir. The deliveries are very easy to get, especially in the summer when you've got peak demand. They just let it come down the aqueduct to us. There's no pumping, anything like that. It's very advantageous. We found to have anywhere from 10 to 15,000 acre feet to help reduce risks of shortages. So it's good to have that supply there in case we need it. It provides security and cushion for just any unknown challenges that could arise. But, you know, it's very difficult to sustain this capacity throughout multiple critical dry years. So as we're getting 5% allocations, you know, that's only less than 5,000 acre feet, and carryover is what's left over. So it's difficult to sustain these. So I wanted to kind of walk through how we've been doing that the last few years to make sure we do have those backup supplies. So in 2020, we had a dry year, 20% allocation, and this is when all of our PFAS wells went down. You're very familiar with that. So it was an extremely tough year for us. We had 9,000 acre feet of carryover storage, but we knew that there could potentially be more dry years ahead. So we started pumping our banked water. And in 2020, we actually were able to utilize a lot of exchange water before we started dipping into the banks. And I have another graphic to go through on that as well. But the goal was to make sure that we had at least as much carryover supply, if not more, next year, because we were a little below that sweet spot. So we were able to utilize bank supplies and save some of that table A. And so you can see in 2021, we actually have more carryover supply available to us at the beginning of that year. Now, 2021 was a very critically dry year, 5% allocation. And we did have a little bit, the NWells came back online helping us out. We continued to utilize as much bank supplies as we could. And what we were able to do is we utilized some carryover supplies when we needed it in those peak summer months, but we also were able to back up some of the surplus bank supplies that we took throughout the year as well. So one of the things with bank supplies is that you can't get it all when you want it. You can only get small portions each month, and there's a lot of competition, especially in the summer months. So we were able to spread out the recovery capacity throughout the year, and we were able to back up some of those supplies in the San Luis Reservoir, anything that wasn't utilized. So at the beginning of 2022, you can see we have then a combination of carryover supplies, but also water that's been backed up in San Luis Reservoir available to be delivered. We don't have to pull it out of the banks. We're not constrained by the bank pumping and other people trying to get water out at the same time. It's available for us. And so we started 2022 out with a kind of right in that sweet spot where we wanted to at around just under 14,000 acre feet. This year comes along, and unfortunately, it's another critically dry year. And we've basically been able to do exactly the same thing. We're still continuing to take as much bank supply as we can. We got lucky and some more capacity became available at Rosedale for us. And any unused banked water has been backed up or will be backed up into the San Luis Reservoir available for us. And you can see we're expecting to have just about 8,000 acre feet of carryover and 7,000 acre feet of backed up storage in the San Luis Reservoir available for us in 2023. So we're right where we want to be, and we have some cushion not knowing what 2023 can bring us. Next slide, please. This is a graphic that is in your staff report each month. I update it. And what it shows is our actual 2022 monthly demands by source. So the bars represent all those sources and our actual demands. And then the dotted line represents our estimated monthly demands that we project at the beginning of the water or the beginning of the year. Some of the highlights you can see, the alluvial and Saugus supplies are there at the bottom in the blue and the red. Anything above that are imported supplies. A lot of dry year supplies are being used. You can see the different colors change each month. You know, that's kind of showing us what's available at what time of year and how things get used. One big thing to highlight is the gap in the summertime starting in May through September. So the gap between the bar and the dotted line shows us how much conservation has been helping us reduce demand. So it's made a huge impact and is very beneficial because if those conservation programs were not you know, getting the message out and trying to get people to conserve extra water, we could potentially be filling those gaps with more imported supplies. So it really does make a difference when you come down to the nitty-gritty monthly information. Every bit has been helping quite a bit. Next slide, please. I wanted to share an operating plan that I put together. I think it was at the end of August for the September presentation, but this is a worst case scenario operating plan. What it shows us is where we're at in 2022 in blue there. It looks at what happens if 2023 is also a 5% allocation year, and then what happens if after that 2024 is another 5% allocation year. Again, this is worst case scenario. We can't possibly imagine that this would happen, but if it does, I wanted to show you how we would be able to meet those demands. So we're going to start from the top and work our way down. We've got the demands that we're assuming at the top, 71,100 for 2022, and we increase that every year by 2%, just accounting for growth as laid out in the Urban Water Management Plan. And then we go, how do we meet those demands? So we're starting with our local supplies, our groundwater. You can see you've got the alluvial and the Saugus supplies there. And as you look to the right, if you compare the alluvial water available in 2022 compared to 2024, you can see the increase in alluvial and Saugus supplies. And that's those recovered wells coming back online. So those are adjusted as frequently as we get information. Hopefully can continue to be coming back online as quickly as possible. I know everyone is working hard for that. You've got recycled water there, and then that basically sums up what's left is our imported demand. So we look at our imported supplies. You've got table A water, which is across the board a 5% allocation. You've got the Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo 11,000 acre feet, which is across the board a firm supply every single year, no matter what the conditions are. And even with those imported base supplies, you can see in red there, we have excess and negative is showing a shortfall. So we're still short anywhere from 32,000 to 30,000 acre feet in 2024 of supplies and our base supplies to meet demands. And so that's where we drop into our dry year water supplies. I've made estimates about our carryover based on the way we're operating now with carryover and backed up supplies and moving into the future. You've got Rosedale banking there. So we're taking the 20,000 acre feet this year. We assume we can get up to 15,000 acre feet utilizing Irvine Ranch's short-term agreement in 2023. And in 2024, we're assuming only our firm recovery capacity of 10,000 acre feet, because anything above that is basically just what's available. If Rosedale has extra recovery capacity available, we can use it. If not, we're being conservative and only going with the 10,000 acre feet. The semi-tropic water, we would recover the full amount in all these years at 5,000 acre feet across the board. Yuba Accord is available to 2025, and so you've got the actual amount for 2022 and assumed amounts 23 and 24. Below that, you can see that we're not accessing any of our flexible storage supplies in Castaic Lake. So we will be able to meet demands without having that, but it will be available if we do need it. And that's 6,000 acre feet. And then below that in green, you've got the stage two conservation demand reduction. So because we have stage two initiated already, we're assuming a conservative 15% demand reduction from the demand at the top of this table. Matt looks at it a little differently. My demands do include LA 36. And so we assume at 15%, because we're in that stage two range of 10 to 20%, we're assuming 15% is around 10,500 acre feet of savings. And I can tell you in 2022, I don't think we're going to hit that mark. I think we're going to be around 8,000 acre feet, but that is still a very good amount of savings that we've gotten from demand reduction. Because if you think about it, we only initiated stage two at the end of April. So to get that much savings for this year, we were hoping for that, but I don't think it was a guarantee. And so that's beneficial. But moving into 2023 and 2024, we'll have, if we continue to see these dry conditions and stay at stage two, you can see what we've estimated our demand reduction would be. And then at the bottom, again, it shows us where we would be with our carryover supplies moving into next year. So this just shows that we would continue to operate and try to have at least 15,000 acre feet available moving forward. And these are all estimates, worst case scenario. They get adjusted very frequently, but this kind of gives you an idea if things continue to be bad, how we would operate moving forward. And then I think I have one last slide. I heard a lot of, you can move to the next slide, please. I heard a lot of discussion about banking and exchange balances. So we wanted to make sure to include that as well. This is a similar graphic that shows kind of how our banking and exchange program balances have changed since 2020 when we really started utilizing them. You can see in 2020, you've got the bar graph, and that is a combination of all of our banked and exchange programs available in 2020. And then below that, I show the water year type. So 2020 was a dry year. We started the year with about 165,000 acre feet. Wells PFAS happened. It was a pretty dry year. So we did utilize about 23,000 acre feet of exchange water and banking water. The majority of it was from our Rosedale Rio Bravo exchange, as you can see as you move to 2021. So 2021, we were at 142,000 acre feet. It was a critically dry year, 5% allocation. We were pulling as much banked water as we could. And by 2022, we ended up at 117,000 acre feet. Unfortunately, it was another critically dry year with another 5% allocation. So in 2023, we are anticipating to be at about 92,000 acre feet available in our banking and exchange program. We're assuming it will be a drier critical year. Hopefully not, but we're going with being conservative. If conditions continue, and so this, moving from 2023 forward assumes worst case scenario like the operating plan I just showed you. If things continue, can see we dropped to 71,000 acre feet in 2024, and then about 56,000 acre feet by the beginning of 2025. And as Director Gutzeit said, at that point, we would have about 33,000 acre feet in Rosedale and 20,000 acre feet in semi-tropic with a little bit of exchange water. But that is, again, at least three more years past 2025 that we would have, our firm capacity to recover from our banking program. So though it looks like our bank supplies are dwindling, we have been able to utilize these programs during some pretty tough times and have allowed us to be very resilient throughout all these challenges. So, another good thing is that once it does start raining, we have a lot of space to put water back in these programs. So I think that's all I have right now. So I'll pass it back to Matt. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Sarah. Next slide, please. Now we'll turn to regulatory updates and the water shortage contingency plan. Next slide. So here we're going to look at two different components of regulatory updates here in the state of California pertinent to drought. We have the Governor, State Water Resources Control Board emergency declarations. We keep track of this in kind of a running tab. Essentially, those that are applicable today started in July 9th, where the drought emergency declaration was extended to 50 counties, and the governor asked for all Californians to reduce conservation by 15% compared to 2020's usage levels. In September, the State Water Resources Control Board began requiring monthly reporting relative to those targets. In October, the drought emergency declaration was extended to all counties, including Los Angeles County, thereby impacting SCV in the Santa Clara Valley. In January of 2022, the State Water Resource Control Board adopted emergency regulations prohibiting common water waste activities, as well as other components and provisions specific to HOAs and CCR enforcement. And then in May 2024, which became effective on June 16th, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted Emergency Regulation 2022-0018, which essentially requires all urban water suppliers to implement Stage 2 measures and bans non-functional turf for CII, commercial, industrial, institutional, homeowner association, and common interest developments. Relative to SCV Water and our board and our agency, we enacted Stage 2 in April 26th of this year. That was following the enactment of Stage 1 in November of 2021. Next slide, please. The Water Shortage Contingency Plan and Ordinance were adopted in 2021, and they include two different components. One is the plan activity for conservation and agency activity specific to water shortage and drought conditions. And then there's a water conservation ordinance, water conservation, water supply shortage ordinance. Together, those two form the foundation of our operating plan here, specific to drought. The water shortage contingency plan has these different strategies: drought sustainable actions, deploying supply augmentation, which Sarah mentioned. We have our drought programs, messaging and outreach, engagement, restrictions, and additional measures to accomplish that stage reduction requirements. And for Stage 2, it's from 11 to 20% voluntary conservation. Next slide, please. For our drought programs, we take our standing active conservation programs, reformat them, and rebrand them to be specific to drought support, but also to pick up those traditional conservation activities. We have a very, broad portfolio of conservation programs to help address our customers' many needs in terms of conservation, ranging from lawn replacement rebates to smart controller rebates, drought-ready checkups, drip conversion rebates, online workshops, education classes, and so forth. Activity has been pretty strong since the drought emergency was declared and has increased in activity with updates to those programs, as well as the enactment of the Stage 1 and Stage 2 Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Next slide, please. The Stage 2 has the following water waste restrictions. We prohibit runoff, washing cars without hose nozzles, using water to wash down sidewalks, driveways, and hardscapes, irrigating during within 48 hours of measurable rainfall, that's it measured at quarter inch, using fountains without recirculating pumps, and watering turf on public medians. Next slide, please. We also have the following watering limits specific to irrigation. That's watering, limiting to 3 days per week watering, even odd address, shown here, no watering on Saturdays. We have limits on watering station runtimes to 2 5-minute cycles, 10 minutes max. That's to help customers maximize the utility of that irrigation to avoid runoff, as traditional sprinklers typically will contribute to runoff after about 5 minutes due to the soil composition and traditional precipitation rates of sprinkler systems. So if folks use the 2 5-minute cycle, they're going to get much of that water will percolate and benefit their landscapes rather than running off. Also, we have watering times November through April, 6 p.m. or 12 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then 6 p.m. to 12 noon. And then in May through October, it's 12 to 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. to 12 p.m. Next slide, please. This is just real quick overview of our communications that our communications teams and collateral materials our communication teams have put together. We have the stage two drought bulletin that was mailed out in June. We have the non-functional turf emergency watering ban that we mailed out to all commercial, industrial, institutional customers, HOA, and common interest development customers. All impacted customers received the non-functional turf. All customers received stage two drought bulletin. We also have our frequently asked questions about the drought. In addition to that, we have social media campaigns, other engagement activities, and really working with communications to get the message out to the public about the water, about the drought, and about the stage two goals and the benefits of conservation and water use efficiency. Next slide, please. Okay, so next we're going to turn to the SCV water demand performance. We'll look at normal conservation targets and drought response targets. Next slide, please. With that, the normal conservation target is going to be essentially a 24% gallon per capita day reduction by 2022 compared to our 2010 baseline. We have our drought conservation target, which is 11 to 20% as the stage two. Also, we track the governor's 15% of 2020 performance. And then we have our statewide and regional drought performance. That is how our community is performing conservation demand reduction wise compared to our hydrologic region, as well as that to the entire state, as reported by the State Water Resources Control Board. Next slide, please. All right, so when we turn to our interim conservation target or normal conservation target, the black dashed line shows today's, what shows what today's population would use at the 274 gallon per person per day 2010 bench baseline that was part of the SBX 7-7 framework. We continued that through the interim until we are again are updating that with the new conservation long-term framework that begins in 2024. Those draft measures have just been released. So once those measures are finalized, we can update our conservation plan to modify these targets to meet those new mandates. But anyway, looking at these, you can see that we have pretty much through most of the year been below the 24% reduction. Specifically, after May, we did see some increased usage in February and March, and that was due to the lack of rainfall that we had earlier this year, the kind of driest spring or driest January through March on record. But year to date, compared to our interim conservation target, we're 9% below our target, which is about 4,500 acre feet below our 24% GPC reduction by 2022. Next slide, please. This chart shows us our 2022 monthly production compared to our 2020 monthly production, and the dashed line shows us the 15% voluntary conservation target. Again, you're comparing 2 years that had somewhat different weather patterns. For example, you can see the cratering in March and April in 2020 as well as in the target. That's because we had rain in 2020. We did not have rain in 2022. Those 2 months alone was about 3,000 acre feet combined over what our target was because of the absence of rain. However, after the adoption of stage two of the water shortage contingency plan and ordinance, we can see that the delta between the blue 2020 production bar and the 2022 production bar starts to increase. And in September, our production fell below the 15% target. And I'll dive further into those statistics. Next slide, please. This chart is very informative because it gives us a lot of direction and understanding of how monthly usage as well as cumulative conservation changes since 2020. It's looks kind of like a ride at Magic Mountain, but essentially what we're looking at is anything over the black dashed line. We have monthly, which is the blue line, and we have cumulative, which is the orange line. That's conservation relative to the same period in 2020. So we can see that in March and April of 2021, for example, we had increases from 142 to 162% compared to 2020. That also occurred again in February, March, and April of 2022 compared to 2020. However, as we look to that change, we can also see two gray lines that show us the bandwidth of our stage two 11 to 20% water shortage contingency plan reduction goals. And what we're showing here is that for the month of September, that blue line drops into 17.2% reduction compared to September 2020. Our cumulative change, which is the orange line, is a down by about 1%. But it does show us some interesting things that we can kind of look at and plan for upcoming conservation activities. And that is that if we want to smooth those demand curves in March and April, considering that we might be hitting a triple dip La Nina, we may want to increase, and we can increase, our engagement and conservation messaging activity in January and February to be proactive to help smooth those curves. Next slide, please. So this slide is just going to show us how we're performing relative to our hydrologic region, which is the South Coast, as well as statewide conservation. I'm going to focus on August because that was the last month that was recorded at the State Water Resource Control Board. They're always about 60 days behind. So in August, SEV waters conservation was down 10.1% relative to 2020, and our cumulative was up 0.5%. If we look at the South Coast, which is outlined with the box, August 2022 was down 9.7%. So if you look at those two, we were about 0.4% over the South Coast region. So we outperformed slightly. That helps us kind of look at where we're at in terms of, are we in the right bandwidth, the right universe, the right standard deviation? We slightly outperformed the South Coast for the month of August. Cumulative, though, we're up 0.5% in the South Coast region. Cumulative, that's the entire time dating back to July 2021 through August 2020. Usage in the South Coast is down 2%. Ours shows an increase of 0.5%. We turn to statewide conservation for August was down 10.5%, slightly outperforming the agency by about 0.4%. And cumulative for the entire period was down 4%, where we're still up by about 0.5%. So again, I think the biggest contributor to that increase or change was those months of March and April, where we saw that 3,000 acre foot increase in use due to the extreme dry weather and the beginning of the irrigation season. Next slide, please. Okay, so now we're going to conclude with some actions and next steps, and I'll try to get through these pretty quickly. Next slide. For October, we have continued non-functional turf ban outreach. As I mentioned before, our communication team and conservation teams have sent out notifications, email information, as well as mailers to all CII, HOA, and common interest development customers. We have completed new drought-ready videos, which we will be launching in social media format, and perhaps can play at other formats, including but not limited to the theater, if that's what the communication team works out. September, October, we have SEV Community Conservation in Action. As you can see in those last charts, we are seeing significant conservation start to materialize in the valley, and we'd like to showcase those champions of water efficiency throughout the valley to help share those success stories to customers who might be looking for new ways to save water. We also have our lawn replacement program priorities for the fall. Great time to plant landscapes, our new drought tolerant, water efficient California native landscapes. Great time to plant those in the fall and spring. So we encourage folks to take advantage of that program now. And then we also have, as always, continued performance monitoring and adaptive management. Next slide, please. So in review, here's a summary. Drought conditions persist. We have a third La Nina year forecasted. The statewide drought emergency is in effect and remains in effect. The State Water Resources Control Board emergency regulations are in effect and are going to remain so until June of next year, unless otherwise rescinded. The State Water Project water allocation was at 5% for 2 years in a row. And Sarah's plan shows an additional third year of 5% allocation. We have continued use of critical dry year supplies. SCV water shortage stage 2 ordinance and the contingency plan are in effect. Without conservation, storage and banking recovery is prolonged, and the current monthly conservation performance is on track, and cumulative savings continues to trend down, but we still have work to do. Next slide, please. With that, I'd be happy, as well as Sarah, to answer any questions the board might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Thank you, Ms. Flory. I do have an unfortunate announcement. President Martin had to leave our meeting today due to an unfortunate death in the family. So he asked me to run the meeting in his absence. thoughts and prayers are with President Martin and his family. All right, Madam Secretary, any public questions from the public?
No, there's not.
All right, we'll open up the room for any questions or comments from directors. Director Planbeck.
So, quite incredible report. Thank you so much. I wish that when there's different sections, we could like have a pause at each section and maybe be able to ask questions before we get past too far past it. But my question is for Sarah, and it's about it's let's see, what page is this? This is the 2022 and 2024 operating plan, August 2022. Assume stage two, 2023 through 2024. And there's no page number. But my question for you was that you said the stage two conservation demand reduction was 15%, and you have 10,000 in there, but then you said we're really only going to make 8,000?
Yes. So I put this together and I didn't want it to get more confusing. So it's a calculated number on that table of 15% of the demand that's at the top, just to keep it consistent. But in actuality, my estimate is that we'll end up at about 8,000 in total. So we fall a little bit short. I think that's around 11 or 12%.
Well, that's 20% short. So, I mean, I understand what you're doing, but when you have a figure that's actually what happened, I think it's maybe better to note, or maybe with a footnote, it's 8,000, not put in 10,000 when it's not going to happen. I mean, this is a concern I have about our water supply assessments as well. So I'm just...
Well, this is a projection, and I don't know what's going to happen yet because we haven't finished out the calendar year. So when I do get the final information, I can put the actual, okay. But... at this point, it's my best estimate.
Okay.
I don't know how official that is.
Well, your best estimate for 2023 and 2024. Mm-hmm. But you think it's going to be lower. You've already said that.
I'm pretty sure, but we don't know for sure yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's just my suggestion, and it's a very good report. I'm just, 2,000 acre feet is a lot of water, so it's maybe just as well to put what you think is really going to happen, not just 15% to keep the lines all the same or something. That's just my feeling anyway, that it's better to have that something that you think is actually going to happen rather than overestimating. That's my only comment. But thank you so much. I always appreciate it when you give a report and when Mark gives a report. They're wonderful reports.
Thank you for your comments.
They're at the good side.
Quick question, and it's related to the use of banked water to cover our PFAS wells, but it occurred to me that on the shadow box presentation somewhere in there, and now I can't find it, it's taken us a long time, I want to say out till like 2030, to get all the PFAS wells online. And is that... I know we talked about it when I came back on the board. Is that all supply chain logistic delays, or is there some financial delay in there? Is there a reason why it's taking out to 2030? Is it a combination of both financial and logistics? Why so long?
I'm going to say it's a combination of everything. And I'm gonna pass it to Mike Albert to go into specifics. But originally for the urban plan, we had worked on the groundwater. I believe we did a groundwater recovery assessment with Kennedy Jinks when we first knew that this was all happening, and they laid out a schedule that would work for us financially. And we're still continuing to go through that schedule. working with what the engineers can handle, working with budgets, working with supply chain issues. And so kind of all laid out in the perfect, in the way that would work for us most beneficially. And
Okay, so
anybody else has any other comments?
That matches the plan that was laid. I think that was something I missed before, but that was a planned schedule, and we're on our planned schedule.
I think there's been some delays from that original planned schedule due to some of those, supply chain issues, things like that. But overall, what wells come online and the timing of those and how they're all laid out is according to schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Colley.
Sarah, quick question for you first. Could you explain a little more on how backup water in San Luis Obispo works? And is that water potentially subject to spill?
Yes. So as we're pulling water out of the banks, that's in the Central Valley area. So we're pumping water into the aqueduct. And it all gets mixed together and DWR is doing their thing. But basically, we let them know how much water we're pumping in each month. They know how much is coming down from the aqueduct from San Luis Reservoir. In the end, once the month is over, they can look and say, okay, well, you said, say you were going to pump in 3,000 acre feet, but you only used 2,000 acre feet of demand. We're not allowed to store that extra water in Castaic Lake. So what they do is they do a paper exchange and basically say, okay, well, another agency sent table A water or carryover water from the reservoir, and they switched it. They just do a paper exchange. So instead of sending that from San Luis, they just said, okay, now we're going to put 1,000 in San Luis and account for that extra water we pumped in and didn't use. So it's kind of confusing. I know that was not a very clear explanation, but it's a paper operational exchange that DWR does for us.
And then the second part of the question is, could in theory that water spill?
Yes, in theory that water is, it could spill. All in right. theory, though, we have a very long way to go before that is a possibility.
Right, I understand that. I understand. Yeah. I just wanted to better understand how that worked, because I didn't think that we pumped the water back north.
We did not.
I didn't think so. And then for Matt, oh boy. Let me come back, because I want to reformulate my thinking here a little bit.
Dr. Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dickens and Ms. Fleury, for your presentations. I always enjoy them. Even when I hear them multiple times, I feel like I pick up new information each time. And I know, Ms. Fleury, you particularly have, I think, the challenge of taking what could be very complex information and trying to present it in an understandable fashion for us. So I appreciate that. My comment is just to say a big kudos to our customers for hitting the 15% conservation mark, or the reduction target, I should say, and an even bigger kudos to the staff. So Mr. Dickens, you and your conservation staff, and to Ms. Martin and her communication team, for helping our customers understand why we need to hit these targets and how to do so. So I just want to say thank you to everyone for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Armitage. Dr. Brunstein.
Thank you. Thank you again for the presentation. I think that uniting both conservation and water supply gives us a comprehensive view on what's going on. My first point was just, it's more of a comment for next time, just to have baseline values in when things are given, so we know like what the participation usually is, or what the temperature normally is, or things like that, just so we have a baseline on our to compare it to. I was wondering, did it ever happen, was there ever a four dip La Nina? And what does that mean? Could it happen? Will it happen? Like, has that, do we know anything about that
if that could happen and what it means for us?
Well, first we'd have to name it the quad dip, I guess. And I have not heard of that being a possibility. I think anything's possible at this point, but in the historical records, I do not believe that that has happened. Just the other two triple dip La Niñas.
And traditionally after a triple dip, is there a lot of rain maybe?
Traditionally, so the past two times that it's happened, the third year gave us about 70% of average precipitation statewide. So it was still a pretty dry year, below average. This year, the state ended up at about 76% of normal precipitation statewide. So we were a bit higher than that. And I think the thing to keep in mind, just like El Niños and La Niñas, there's always those outlier years where it's absolutely the opposite of what they say could happen. So though there have been more consistently dry La Niña years or winters, there's been some really random, very wet La Niña winters. It all is dependent on that jet stream and how those atmospheric rivers hit us. So we're just planning for the traditional one at this point, and it's just a matter of kind of waiting for those atmospheric rivers and see where they land. I know I did read that there is one coming in like 7 days. So
fun. Yeah. I had a question about San Luis Reservoir, but Director Colley already asked that. My last one is kind of, so you said that the table about our operating plan was worst case, but I would argue, especially since our carryovers are not always guaranteed, that that would probably be a worst case. And then the conservation, if we don't hit the mark also, I would say that this is probably one of those times where that table with passive demand, passive conservation and active conservation would be helpful. And if we don't, like a real worst case scenario, not what we would like the worst case scenario to be.
I agree. Things can always get worse.
There could be an earthquake. I get it. Yeah. Like, but these are values within this table that say that they're not dependable. So I think that that would be good.
So the carryover supply, if it does end up spilling, in that case, our allocation is going to end up being pretty high. So we wouldn't be in that 5% allocation year. The last time our carryover supply spilled, I believe we came out with a 75-85% allocation, which is a lot of water. And that's where I'm trying to get rid of it with exchanges with other agencies, because we don't have enough storage for that amount. So carryover supply is a pretty, I think, a pretty conservative estimate, assuming that the conditions stay dry, because that's assuming that the San Luis Reservoir is going to stay fairly low. Yes, there could be a 0% allocation that we have to deal with. If that happens next year, you know, we've done the good planning of making sure that we have enough carryover supply to supplement that 5,000 acre feet of table A that we might get in a 5% allocation. And I think that the amount of pain that causes some of the other agencies, as we've seen what the 5% allocation can do this year, there's still agencies asking for health and safety supplies. So, you know, knowing that we're in a better position this year than next year, you know, we're thinking the 5% is the worst case scenario. It may start out at zero, but we're hoping by the end of winter, we'll be at least at five. And then moving forward, you know, we're hoping really, since 5% is the lowest we've ever seen as a final allocation, we don't want to make up that 0% allocation, because we really hope that won't happen.
Yes.
But it definitely can get worse.
Amen.
I can make up those scenarios, but I don't think you want to see them. But they're just made up. I mean, that's, you know, these are conservative estimates of the worst case scenario.
Okay. And then I would like to echo Director Armitage's congratulations to Santa Clarita customers for actually finally hitting that 15% conservation. So that's exciting. Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, Dr. Bronstein. Director Cawley?
I want to make a couple of comments. First, I want to sort of remind the board of how to think about a statistical possibility or probability. If you look at the probability of tossing a coin and getting heads four times in a row, it's very, very, very low. 1/2 to the 4th power. I don't know what that exactly is. I don't have a calculator with me. But it's a pretty small number. But if you flipped a coin three times and gotten heads each time, that doesn't mean that the odds of heads the fourth time is something other than a half. It's a fair coin. So we really need to look at where we are today. And that is where we are today. And we, you know, the probability of continued low precipitation years hasn't changed. So, you know, that it's just as probable next year as it was any other year, if not more so because of climate change. So asking ourselves questions like what is the probability of a fourth year dry year isn't very informative if you realize that we've already had two and actually a lot more than that, depending on how you look at it. So just want to make that point that the way we look at statistics is important and we should start with the reality of today. Question, really quick question for Matt. Matt, am I correct that the difference between stage two and stage three in our contingency plan is primarily just the winter months watering 2 versus 3 days a week?
Director Cawley, thank you. The primary change in the ordinance is from the winter months from 3 days per week to 2 days per week. But the plan increases activity from 11 to 20% to 21 to 30% reduction compared to unconstrained demand.
Okay. And obviously, I guess we would ramp up, if it's possible to ramp up further, our outreach in order to try to get that. But as far as the public goes, it's the rules that they would operate under are 2 versus 3 days. And so I just want to put out for the board's consideration that we think about the possibility of going to a stage three sooner rather than later. If we wait to do stage three until May, it'll have little or no meaning in my view, because we would then be going to the summer months where stage three doesn't change the rules at all. So I think that if we want to look forward to further conservation and try to get a conservation higher, we need to consider that possibility. And so hopefully I'll remember to bring that up under future agenda items as well. But I would like to have the board consider that because I believe it is a policy decision. I believe it is a decision we need to make based on the risk that we're willing to take that we need that water later. And if we engage in stage three now and we end up getting a banner wet winter and end up spilling all that water, it's be unfortunate. But if we need that water later, it might well have been a good idea. So since we are having difficulty predicting the future and we know that we're currently have been engaged in a lot of use of our banked water supplies, that maybe we ought to not be, maybe we ought to try our best to use them as conservatively and slowly as we reasonably can. So that's just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Cawley. Madam Secretary, can you make a quick note of Director Cawley's request for item 12? Should we forget? Can you bring that up again during item 12, Director Cawley?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you want me to bring it up again, or do you want to just...
Just in case we forget. Okay. I hope we don't.
Thanks.
All right. Mr. Dickens, Ms. Flory, I think I speak on all the directors here that really, really, really appreciate these regular updates. They're very helpful. I do have one question on the banking and exchange balances January 1st table. A question was brought up or comment by Director Gutzai during the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting regarding our ultimate goal in terms of banking volume and then, you know, the extraction flow rate from these banking facilities. Do we have an idea of how much of banking do we want to invest for in the future?
It is all of our banking possibilities are, you know, I think we're going to come back to the board with a presentation utilizing our new reliability model, which will kind of give the board an idea of what your reliability goals want to be. And so we'll be able to look at different scenarios and say, okay, if we have all of these new Saugus wells, but no banking supplies, what's our reliability out to 2050? If we decide that we don't want Saugus wells and we want more banking programs, how does that look? And so we'll be able to give you different scenarios and you'll be able to have a better idea of what our goals would be at that time. We can get that information from our old reliability model. So if you want some of those scenarios brought, we can do that. But we are working on updating the GoldSim model, which is going to give us a much more up-to-date look at those details that I think you're going to be interested in. So we'll be able to give you the information you need so you can make those decisions. And I believe that some of those decisions are going to be coming your way. For example, the sites and AVEC Water Bank, things like that. You know, those are programs that we're looking at participating in so that we can meet our reliability goals out into the future. With regards to how much water we put in and take out, you know, that is going to be reliant on the hydrology. But we give that range so that we know we can store enough and sustain those dry years and be able to pull enough out. So,
okay, understood. And the GoldSim model, when is the expected presentation date on that anticipated date?
I believe I was going to try to bring some of that updated information. Najwa was going to pull together some of that preliminary information potentially for the December committee meeting at the Water Resources Committee. If not, I would say early January.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments, directors? All right, Ms. Flory, Ms. Dickens, thank you. We're going to move on to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone, go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Got some notes here. They're a little more cryptic than usual, so I won't sound as smoothly scripted. That's okay. And I just violated Kathy's excellent speaking guidance of never apologize before you speak. So I just realized that. If you haven't read this this month's pipeline, it's a good one. Okay, moving on. A couple updates. Let's get the first one out of the way, which is COVID. We did, after kind of falling into a nice I don't want to say comfortable, but not alarming pattern of 0 to 1 cases a week or so. We experienced COVID's hold my beer moment with 5 cases at Rockefeller last week. We had a little mini outbreak there. Contact tracing on that's complete, but there was a indication that there was probably some person-to-person spread in the workplace. So we've done our due diligence to notify LA County Public Health. They've provided us with their guidance. We are officially at that location on their radar, and that puts us in a category of some supplemental cleaning, masks for everybody at that site for the next 14 days until we clear it. No new cases have come in so far since the flurry at the end of last week, and hopefully that'll stay the case. We did. We also had an isolated case at Pine Street and one at Rio. So it's still out there, and if it is around, it is pretty able to make the leap. So just be cognizant of that. Moving on to happier news, I would like to congratulate our engineering and water quality team for securing the operating permit from DDW for the Valley Center well PFAS treatment facility. And just fantastic work. You will have an opportunity to share your applause again, hopefully, on November 9th at 10 a.m. Kathy and the staff are working on a ribbon cutting. I don't want to jinx it. We did the last one virtually. This one we plan to do in person. So even if we have to wear spacesuits. So, but hopefully, well-timed cough too. That was good. Okay. I don't know why I'm in a silly mood. I had coffee. That's probably why. I never have coffee at night. This is why. Another upcoming event, it's too bad Gary had to leave because I know he really has wanted to have an opportunity for the staff to have a holiday event again, and for board members to be able to drop in and share their thanks. So this won't be our pre-merger traditional holiday event for those of you who remember and pine for that. But it will be an event that will be oriented to allow our staff to spend just a sort of a longer lunch together at the activity center. We have a date for that, which is, Kathy just left me a note, the 15th of December, over a long lunch hour, 11:30 to 1:30. You'll get some info, but we would like to invite board members to come so you can personally, within your comfort zone, with whatever equipment will be warranted in December, give your thanks to the staff. So, and I'm sure that they always enjoy having that interaction as well. And perhaps next year we'll be able to go back to the fully traditional event. But one of the things was we did some work with a committee that Kathy has put together, brand new, called the Impact Committee, Employee Activity Committee, EMP-ACT, and trying to find out what kinds of activities are, you know, our workforce, which is continuing to evolve and change, would like to have to help us continue to build cohesion and sort of work hard but have a little bit of fun culture here. So wanted to do that. And let's see, I got my notes are spilling over to the water supply assessment notes, so I won't read those again, but I did take notes. So I had a good one-on-one meeting between now and the prior meeting, GM update, with Director Kelly, probably our last one. So that was nice to get an opportunity to kind of go. And I just want you to know he was grilling me on upcoming items that are coming to the finance committee. So he's still actively going to grind it out to the very last meeting, I suspect. So, but it was great to have that opportunity. And you know, I've been here almost 7 years, and I've seen a number of board members come and go in different ways. And, you know, I think of the relationship that you establish with each one as you go, and can attest to, you know, each board member that's come through these doors and into this boardroom or the Newhall boardroom prior, I think has added something to the mix. And the comments earlier about, you know, elected board, I think that's part of the vision that we had of putting this agency together, was to move from a situation where you had private water company boards and two public boards making decisions separately and then trying to coordinate to having the ability to have this conversation in one room with one board. So as hard as it is to go through that transition, I think it will get us to a really good place for governing the agency as we go forward. And each person that comes in will have a role in kind of being a steward of that, of that process. So I'll leave it as my last soapbox comment for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Madam Secretary, any questions from the public?
Yes, there is. Just one moment. Ms. Kaufman, you may begin your public comment.
Hi, April. if this is the improper place to bring this up, forgive me and stop me, please. I live in a complex where the HOA, since it was brought up twice tonight about HOAs taking on the responsibility of caring about water usage, where and when and how can I anonymously report the complex in which I live, where the landscaping company runs the water whenever and often every single day?
I'll try to answer that question. We do have a form that I have a couple of constructive thoughts to offer on this. First, you're no longer anonymous.
I know. I understand.
Sorry. There is a form, and sometimes it is just an awareness issue. Having been on an HOA board in the 1990s, I know that it's an interesting process because you have board members who meet once a month. Sometimes you have a grounds or landscape committee that walks the project with the gardener once a month. The gardener does most of the settings for things. No. And then the management company pays the bills. So there is definitely a built-in disconnect there. And one thought is you can use the form that's on our website in the conservation section. And I can, if you contact April tomorrow, we will make sure you can find it, because it's findable, but I want to make sure you actually can find it.
Thank you.
Easily. The other thought I have is if you know any of the board members, you might personally ask them about that.
No.
Okay. and don't tell me what HOA you're in.
Because... I'm not going to do that, but they don't walk the property, nor does the landscaping owner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to respect your anonymity in that process. But if you did have a relationship, that's another way to get at that, is to let them know, because it is costing everybody money.
Absolutely.
Well,
my concern. Yeah. That is my concern.
Yeah. Okay. Happy to help.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Kaufman, does that conclude your question, comment? I guess it does. Any other questions from the public, Madam Secretary?
No, there's not.
Any questions, comments from directors? Okay, seeing none, we move on to item 9, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. There were two reports that were emailed and posted to the website. Madam Secretary, any questions from the public regarding those?
No, there is not.
Any questions, comments from directors? Seeing none, we move to item 10, President's Report. For the outside the agency conferences events, the City of Santa Clarita State of the City on October 27th will be held at the Canyon Country Community Center. There's a Via Bash on November 4th at the Hyatt Regency Valencia. SV Chamber of Commerce, our 12th annual Salute to Patriots will be on November 9th at the SCV Senior Center at Bellavita. AQUA 2022 Fall Conference is being held in Indian Wells on November 29th through December 1st. Upcoming board meetings, special board meeting on October 21st, start time 1 p.m. This meeting will not be a hybrid meeting. Members of the public are welcome to attend in person. Public comments can be heard in person that day or can be emailed to the board secretary no later than 11 a.m. the day of the meeting for distribution and posting to the SCV Water website. Mitch Rosenberg will be facilitating this meeting virtually, and his assistant Aaron will be attending in person. Next regular board meeting will be on November 1st, start time 6 p.m. Next regular board meeting will be on November 15th. Upcoming committee meetings for the month of November held at Summit Circle. On November 3rd, Engineering and Operations Committee meeting. November 9th, Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. November 17th, Public Outreach and Legislation Committee meeting. All will start at 5:30 p.m. Upcoming committee meetings for the month of November held at Rio Vista Boardroom will be on November 21st. The Finance and Administration Committee meeting also starting at 5:30. And the holiday event on the 15th of December. Any questions from the public, Madam Secretary?
No, there is not.
Any questions, comments from directors? The full list will be emailed to all of you by the board secretary. All right, we move on to item 11, AB123 reports. There were two AB1234 reports that were posted on the website and emailed. Does anyone have any additional AB1234 reports? Director Kelly?
Monday, as Matt made a comment on, we had the GM breakfast meeting. Went very well, and I did drill him quite a bit, and he had all the answers. On the same day was another Aqua ACE committee, but Monday was the last day for tax filing, so I was not able to attend that one. And the only other comment I'd like to say is there's been a moderate family change as to us leaving town in November. We're still planning December. And I told President Martin, and he wants me to continue to run the finance committee for October and November. So just give everybody a heads up. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you, Director Kelly. Any other reports? Director Ford.
Thank you. I also had a telephone meeting with General Manager Matt Stone. We talked mainly about items related to water resources and a few other administrative items. That was on October the 5th. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Ford. Director Colley.
Yeah, I attended the Drought to Flood Symposium that Director Planbeck has provided a really great summary of. So I appreciate you having brought that to our attention, because I probably would not have otherwise attended, but I thought it was particularly interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they brought up a lot of subjects that I don't think I'd ever thought of that we're going to be facing for infrastructure problems. And
Dr. Planbeck, you want to give us a brief recap? I've also attended this meeting.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess one of the things that, I did a write-up and I put in some of the information about it, but one of the things that I really appreciated about it was the first panel was so inclusive of equity issues. And they had a woman from the Community Water Center, which is a group in the Central Valley that works on farm labor issues. And she was talking about some of the things they were facing. I mean, if you get DWR water lines, I think there's over 1,000 wells that have gone dry in the valley and just trying to get water to them. But then if you have a flood event, what they were thinking about is how, if you're trucking water anyway, how are you going to get it through the flood? I mean, it's really getting, I mean, when you look at the flooding in Pakistan, it's just so incredible if we face that in the Central Valley. And there was, of course, Tulare Lake in the Central Valley, and now it's all farms. So I think I really appreciated that first panel, especially. And then I really, the second panel was very technical. It was the Army Corps talking about how they are trying to manage reservoirs differently and some of the problems with arc storms and having a large input of water all at once, and how they were addressing that, because reservoirs have flood control as well as water supply. And if you release water for flood, so you have room for flood control, then you lose it for water supply. So they're looking at different ways they can do that. But then I really appreciated also the last panel, because they were talking about how to deal with floods. And several of the presenters said the best way to deal with floods is not build in the floodplain, which I said that for 20 years. So I thought it was nice to hear it from other people. Anyway, I wish we wouldn't have built in so many of our floodplains in the Santa Clara River. But you have things to add?
Does that conclude your brief summary?
Yeah, that's my brief summary.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. No, it was very informative. Director Planbeck mentions the panels, but what I found most intriguing was the work by the Scripps Institute and UC Davis regarding trying to figure out, anticipate future atmospheric rivers, and how they've seen an alarming pattern of these moving more northbound and not being equally distributed along the West Coast. I might have further comments, but I need to do more data digging to give a thorough feedback on those presentations. Okay, any other reports? Okay, seeing none. Madam Secretary, just for housekeeping, please know that I've also attended that symposium.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving to item 12, director requests for future agenda items. Well, first of all, let's start. Are there any public comments, questions on item 12?
No, there's not.
Okay. Any requests from directors? Director Ford.
Yes. In light of tonight's conversation, I was wondering if staff would be willing to have those involved with the preparation of the groundwater sustainability plan or others give us an overall view of water recharge in the valley. My understanding is that at least within the developed core of the valley, the channels are the main conduit for recharge of the groundwater basins. But if we could have somebody who is more knowledgeable either confirm or deny and give us some elaboration, I think that would be a big help, particularly if we're going to go forward in the future and talk to land use agencies about potentially cutting off infiltration on the projects.
Would you like that as a committee report or a board report?
I'd say based on tonight's input, it should be on the full board.
Noted. Thank you, Director Ford. And Director Colley already made his request. Madam Secretary, we have that? Be able to capture that? Okay, thank you. Any additions to your previous comment, Director Colley? Okay, Director Armitage.
Thank you. So we were having discussions about, we were tossing around ideas for ratepayer assistance program ideas, and we kind of put that on hold while we were all watching SB 222. Which did not pass. And so I would like to kind of bring that back to the table and kick around some ideas around that, the issue or the idea of ratepayer assistance program. Thank you.
Director, do you want to see that on a committee or at full board?
No, well, I think it can start an FNA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Noted. Thank you. Any other requests? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to item 13, adjournment, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, directors. Thank you, staff.